Hey, Happy, you're just sitting over there nude, noodling at the piano. What about you?
Oh, yeah. Gee whiz, fellas.
Oh, you see, he's just so shy, he don't even hardly ever think about gals.
Hey, I always wondered what was inside that egghead of yours, Happy. What do you think about?
You mean when I go back to the ship at night?
Yeah.
And lock the door?
Yeah.
And crawl into bed?
Oh, yeah.
What do I think about?
Yeah.
I think about nuclear war.
Nuclear war?
Uh-huh. Gals are nothing compared to nuclear war.
What did he say?
Gals are little and tear apart, not nuclear war.
I don't get it.
Gals are warm and gals have heart. Blondes are dumb, but bombs are smart. If anything blows this gob apart, it won't be gals.
What'll it be?
It'll be nuclear war.
We, of course, had fire drills like any other school group. We had to teach children how to get out of the building and what to do in case of an emergency like that. But we had the added thrill of the take cover drills and the nuclear holocaust drills. First of all, each of us were dispensed a dog tag, which we were told by this old teacher, somewhat tactlessly, could withstand the heat of 1,000 degrees centigrade, made not to melt. Unfortunately, our skin disintegrated about 900 degrees before, but we had the comfort of knowing we could be identified in the event we were burned beyond recognition in a nuclear holocaust. She actually put it that way. Had my name, I think it's Klein Robert Hebe, something, you know. And there were two kinds. One, if you got ample warning that the Soviets were somewhere over the Antilles. I don't know where that is, but it sounds like a good place to be. When they were some distance away and we had plenty of time. That is, we would get into the halls, line up along the side of the walls, cover our heads with our coats. Then there was a little more serious drill when the enemy was around 98th Street and Park Avenue. I mean, when you could hear the whistle of the thing coming, and there was no warning. And the way they would do this is a monitor would come and turns out to have a thing for the teacher, when this monitor leaves, conduct a surprise take-cover drill. And, you know, she'd go, give it away, look at the class, sign it, and leave. Anyway, children, we were talking about Thomas Jefferson. Take cover! We were instructed to go under the desk, put your backside to the window. For some reason, that was more less valuable to lose than your brain. And I don't remember if you put your hands over your head or not, but of course, they never bothered to change the monitor. So it got, after a while, very boring. The monitor would come in, everyone would slowly get under their desk before the teacher signed it. You know. There was involved in this a system of sirens, and there were two short blasts, one followed by one loud blast is, you know, take cover. Four short blasts and one loud blast, followed by three short blasts, all clear. I mean, you could confuse these and walk out in an all clear and get disintegrated. Also, they foolishly blew a siren every day at 12 o'clock. And it drove me crazy, walking home for lunch, and, it's 12 o'clock, you know, I mean, and it always occurred to me that the Soviets could attack at 12 o'clock, we'd think it's lunch, and we were all gone. It's bye-bye, baby. So it's funny that I had some dreams about it and thought about it. Also, there was a law which prohibited sirens on television programs. If you were watching Abbott and Costello, and there was a chase with an ambulance, hey, Abbott! And the siren started to go off for the ambulance, the sound would cut off on television. All stations were required to, just so it wouldn't confuse people. I think that it had a more subtle and momentous meaning of terror, that it invaded dreams, You took it for granted after a while, like you take everything for granted, like you really didn't think it would happen. You know, we have all kinds of protection. After all, we'll do it to them. That was the truce of terror Eisenhower called it, I've forgotten exactly how he articulated it, but it's true. It held up for many, many years. They knew they'd get it back and therefore didn't do it. But it was, I think, wearing. And it's interesting when you think about it that our upbringing was strict and by the rules, and you didn't break those rules, that was to come later.
Your attention, please. This is Dick Chapman, one of your official civil defense broadcasters with a special message. Military authorities have advised us that an enemy attack by air is imminent. This is a red alert. You are advised to go to your nearest shelter area immediately. Find shelter. There is not time to leave the city. Your state civil defense director has just issued the following instructions. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Do not attempt to join your family or your children if they are now separated. They will be cared for where they are. Obey your civil defense warden and find shelter now. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. If you are at work, obey your civil defense authorities. Go quickly and calmly to your designated shelter. If your children are at school, they are being directed to shelter by their teachers. If you are in an automobile, pull over to the curb and then go immediately to the nearest shelter area. Do not leave your car where it will block traffic. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Stay tuned to 640 or 1240 kilocycles on your radio for official information. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official civil defense broadcast.
In accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare a civil defense emergency to exist in the state of Minnesota. This will put into effect emergency plans for your welfare. Minnesota civil defense organizations, including those of counties and municipalities, are directed to mobilize and act in accordance with approved plans. I am also calling a special session of both houses of the legislature to convene at a place and time I will designate in a later announcement. I ask that you cooperate with your civil defense officials. You will be advised of further developments by radio. Stay tuned for further information. This is Governor Elmer L. Anderson.
One day in October 1962, I walked home from school at 3:30 and found my dad parked in the driveway in front of our house. He normally came home from work at 5:30, not 3:30. Something must be wrong. He was just sitting in the car and listening to the radio. I asked him what he was doing, and he said, "We are all going to die in a few seconds." I suggested going inside and watching the news on TV with Mom. He said he didn't have time to walk the 15 feet to our front door. I figured I just walked a mile from school. Another 15 feet was probably doable. I went inside. Later, my father came in as well. Van Nuys, California did not turn into Hiroshima after all.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following is a test of the emergency broadcast system on XM Radio. Remember, it is only a test.
Wait a minute, I gotta go take stuff out of the bank. What?
This was a test of the emergency broadcast system on XM Radio.
You mother...
If this had been a real emergency, you'd all be really fucked.
Well, I am. I'm completely out of my mind, man.
Communications have completely broken down. The Coney's slow torture of B-59 continues for 5 hours.
We can't do anything until we hear from Moscow.
Leonenko, get to the bridge.
Savitsky never lost it. He just made a decision.
Sir!
It's time to load a special weapon.
Sir.
Give me your key, Maslenikov.
Withering temperatures exceeding 120 degrees, no contact with home. A ship virtually out of power.
It's time to load the special weapon.
And now seemingly under attack.
Come on!
We will sink all the fleet, but we will not humiliate Russia.
Savitsky was an impulsive man. But in his mind, at that moment, he made a correct decision.
Give me your key, Maslenikov.
What are you thinking?
Your key, Maslenikov.
He had no rights because Vasily was in charge. He was the commander of the fleet of all the ships. But Savitsky was the commander of this ship.
The commander is the second in command after God. These are the rules the submarines live by.
We don't know that this is an attack. For all we know, they are trying to surface us.
The future of the world now rests on Vasily Arkhipov's shoulders.
We have orders to defend ourselves.
You may be captain of this ship, but I am commander of this fleet, and you need my permission.
No, Vasily Arkhipov.
Vasily Arkhipov was our commander of the fleet. He was a submariner and a close friend of mine. He was a family friend. He stood out for being cool-headed. He was in control. He was a real submariner.
Two of us have agreed. Do I have your permission?
No. You need all three of us.
He knew that it was madness to fire a nuclear torpedo.
Place
the special weapon in the initial position and restore protection.
And especially that he lived through that and saw it. He didn't hesitate to say no.
God only blessed the man because what would have happened after that? We would have been in nuclear war with Soviet Russia and there would may perhaps not be a world.
They announced they had a big parade on August 8th. August 8th, 61. And this was No More Hiroshima Day, it was called. And, it was the same day they dropped the bomb, right? So they're going to have this huge parade with a Chinese paper dragon and all the Albanians and all the Cubans and the Americans. Everybody was there, you know? This big parade is called No More Hiroshima Day, and everybody would carry Japanese fans with a picture of the bomb thing, and No More Hiroshima, peace, peace. The Russians were setting off their Megaton bomb the same day in Siberia, which is fairly close, and instructions were given through leaflet and over announcement not to look to the east or the west at a certain time during the performance of No More Heroes.
Showing your retinas?
Right.
Beautiful.
Right.
I was on a train from Tokyo to Shimonoseki on the island of Kyushu. My train stopped in Hiroshima for 2 minutes. I recorded my impressions of the famous city. Hiroshima stopwatch. Hiroshima 302. Deaths, tourists, do not sleep. Hiroshima 302. The night rains, drowned light. Hiroshima 302. From newspaper floor they stare. Hiroshima 302. A young girl smiles with no eyes. Hiroshima 302. Old woman sleeping, mouth open, cries. Hiroshima 302. Enter rich lady and sunglasses. Hiroshima 302. A large white man carries crutches. Hiroshima 303. Train jolts. Escape from time. Hiroshima 303. Fibrous white stairs. Soft radiant glow.
Were you in the war?
Yeah, it was the Second World War, and yeah. I liked it a lot over there. I was dropped with the bomb, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I was dropped with the bomb in Hiroshima, and the blast kept me up in the air. It was incredible, and cushioned my fall.
Yeah?
And I came down real soft.
That's almost unbelievable, Marvin.
Well, this is what I recollect. The doctors told me this, and of course they told it to me in Japanese, and I didn't understand the Japanese too well.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, I pieced it together over the years.
This was after they pieced you together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in the plane. I was going to take pictures,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
with your
knucks? Yeah, I had a flash of conscience at the very last minute. I think mm-hmm. that's what done me in. And I said, I can't say it on the radio, but that's what I said, and I threw the camera out the window. And it was around my neck. So I
the bomb or the camera?
The camera.
Oh, yeah. And, you know how the Japanese with the kamikaze bombs they were dropping over Long Beach two weeks ago?
They dropped comics.
That's right.
Everybody laughs. They fall down laughing, and they walk right in. They say, ah, pig! Kick you, and you take over the country.
My mother went to live with her Uncle Alex in the late 30s. She was useless on her parents' farm, so maybe she could be of some use to Alex inventing fruit. His fruit hunting took him to Tibet earlier that decade, when the country was supposed to be closed off. Alex was working for a Mr. Huntington, who owned the railroad, and wanted a new fruit as a testimony to his ego. Large sums of money unlock even the most closed regimes. While he was there stealing new fruit species, Alex befriended a monk and brought him back to California along with the purloined plants. The monk convinced Alex to become a Buddhist and stop eating meat. My mother never became a Buddhist, but after staying with Alex, became a vegetarian, and when she married my father in 1942, made him give up meat as well. So I had not consumed the flesh of any animal all my life at that point. After the Cuban Missile Crisis, my parents decided to make up for the lost decades of meat famine and began eating steaks for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If cows believe in hell, my parents would have been their main devils.
And in 1889, the Peace of Humus broke out, ending the Hundred Years' War against the cows.
Yep.
And last year, Patty, you and the viewers will be interested in noting that the world ended.
As we know it, Hugh.
You're darn tootin', Patty.
I sure am.
Say, who was born today?
Nobody, Hugh.
I mean in history, Patty, before they changed the water.
Fat and docile, big and dumb. They look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be ate at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew. No one imagined the great cow guru. cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. They crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darken in the day. 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough. These uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Guns.